You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, when I was 13 years old, my best friend, Chuck, I shouldn't say his last name on the air, he's not a public figure. Anyhow, Chuck's dad was a magician, a professional magician. He was a member of Ring 54 of the Lansing Guild of Magicians, as I recall. And he had all these, he actually built illusions, you know, sawing a lady in half kind of things in his basement. And he made a living doing magic shows. And Chuck and I got real into this, and I learned a whole bunch of magic tricks from Chuck's dad and from other magicians that I got to know in Lansing. And when I was 13 and 14, you know, in those couple of years, Chuck was also a ham radio operator. He got me into ham radio. And I got my ham radio license when I was 13, too. Chuck, actually, looking back on it, was a big influence on my life. Great guy. But in any case, the big takeaway that I got from learning magic and actually becoming a member of the Magicians Guild, a junior member, you know, but a member. And I mean, Chuck and I actually did magic shows for people. You know, we got paid to do magic shows. The big carryaway that I got was, if your left hand is, you know, flipping the lever that's going to make the rabbit available, or, you know, palming the silk or whatever it may be, if your left hand is doing that and you don't want people noticing it, do something with your right hand that really draws their attention. So everybody's looking at your right hand. You know, if your left hand is covering up the gap in the linking ring, make sure your right hand is waving around the other ring. Whatever it may be. Draw the attention of the audience to the thing you want them to look at so they don't look at the thing you don't want them to look at. That's what the Republican Party is doing today. And their version of the left hand that I just described to you is Candy Crowley. What they're all saying, and there's just this absolute general hysteria. It started in the spin room last night with John Sununu going, within minutes of the debate being over, going after Candy Crowley. And it's all Candy Crowley all day long. I guarantee you, you could tune the dial, any right-wing talk radio right now, you will hear Candy Crowley, Candy Crowley, Candy Crowley, Candy Crowley, Candy, how do you say it? Quack, 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 quack. Why? Because they don't want to talk about the fact that Mitt Romney, A, beat his own record. In the last debate, 27 lies. In a debate, yeah, last night it was 31 lies. He beat his own record. More lies than the previous liar. They don't want you to know about that. They don't want you to know about the times that the president basically just, you know, kicked Mitt Romney's butt up one side the stage and down the other. They don't want you to know about the poor performance that Mitt Romney put in. They don't want you to know about how stiff and robotic and frankly intimidating he looked so often. They don't want any of that stuff discussed. They don't want his comparisons with George W. Bush discussed. They don't want the fact that he has, you know, said that he wants to dial back Pell Grants and that his running mate actually, you know, has put together a budget that all but destroys Pell Grants when he says, oh, yeah, we want to increase Pell Grants. Really? That was news to the rest of us. They don't want to talk about the actual lies that Mitt Romney told, so they're going to talk about Candy Crowley. Mark my words, this is going to be the entire Fox affair all day long, you know, on Fox so-called news today, tonight, tomorrow, the next day, for weeks. Well, until next Monday, until the next debate. It's going to be all Candy Crowley all the time. Because they do not want to talk about what Mitt Romney said. And they certainly don't want to talk about what President Obama said. Oh, I haven't looked at my pension lately. It's not as big as yours. Yeah, you half expected Romney to make a size matters joke at that point, but he was so amped on testosterone, it was like he kept jumping out of his chair, and but to the points rather than the style. Romney said, quote, "I want to make sure we keep our Pell Grant program growing," end of quote. That's an actual quote from last night. Okay, Romney's got a white paper on education. You can find it on his website. It's called A Chance for Every Child. It says that he would quote, and I'm quoting from his own white paper on his own website. would reverse the growth in Pell Grant funding. A Romney administration will refocus Pell Grant dollars on the students that need the most and the place and place the program in a responsible long-term path that avoids future funding cliffs and last-minute funding patches. In other words, cut back on the program. Not spending so much money, you don't have to worry about funding it, right? Well, I mean, it's not even in other words. It says, would reverse the growth in Pell Grant funding. That's what his website says. That's not what he said last night. Do you have that clip? You don't. Okay. We will get to some that we've got clips for. Number two, this is the Center for American Progress put together this, 31 myths told in 41 minutes. It's incredible. The 5-point plan. President Obama says, you got a 5-point plan? Really? You got that clip, right? Here we go. Listen to this.
Governor Romney says he's got a 5-point plan. Governor Romney doesn't have a 5-point plan. He has a 1-point plan. And that plan is to make sure that folks at the top play by a different set of rules. That's been his philosophy in the private sector. That's been his philosophy as governor. That's been his philosophy as a presidential candidate. You can make a lot of money and pay lower tax rates than somebody who makes a lot less. You can ship jobs overseas and get tax breaks for it. You can invest in a company, bankrupt it, lay off the workers, strip away their pensions, and you still make money. That's exactly the philosophy that we've seen in place for the last decade. That's what's been squeezing middle-class families. And we have fought back for 4 years to get out of that mess. The last thing we need to do is to go back to the very same policies that got us there.
There you go. So, taking names and kicking butt. Romney, hysterical. Oil production is down 14% on federal land. Right? He was over and over and over again. Here's the discussion. Clip number 14.
Production on private on government land is down.
No, it isn't.
Production on government land of oil is down 14%, and production on gas
is
down 9%.
It's just not true.
It's absolutely true.
Actually, that 14% is just a one-year number. In fact, this over at Common Dreams, they did the Nation. George Zornick did a really good analysis of this. And here it is. It's true, he writes, that drilling on public lands dropped 14% in 2011. But in 2010, the year before, it had gone up 15%. So that's a net increase of 1% over a two-year period. And overall, oil production on federal lands is up under Obama. So what Romney's doing is he's taking 1 year out of 4 years of the Obama administration when it went down, 2011. Was 2011 the year the blowout happened, the Macondo well down in the Gulf? It was 2 years ago. Yeah, it would have been 2010 then. Yeah, okay. So in any case, I'm not sure why it went down, but, it went up in 2000. It went up 15% in 2010, went down to 14% in 2011. It's net up right now. Not that it matters. I mean, it's drilling that is killing us. That's the one thing that I was very disappointed about last night, was that nobody talked about global warming. I mean, President Obama acknowledged it in his first debate. Remember, he said it's not a myth. It is, but last night it got short shrift. It was, who can be the more, king of clean coal, drill baby drill person. I understand the politics of it, but it should be. I mean, this is a big issue. I mean, this is literally an issue that could mean, if not the extinction of the human race, it could be throwing us back to the Stone Age within a few generations, with massive human suffering in between because of this addiction to fossil fuels. But anyhow, we'll continue. We've just done two of the 31 lies here. We'll continue with that, and we're going to take your calls and your thoughts on the debate.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So stick around. Boy, is there a lot to cover here. Tom Hartman with you, 15 minutes past the hour. Candy Crowley did a great job last night, but the important point is not Candy Crowley. I mean, it is for the right. It is for all the right-wing talk show hosts. I got the memo this morning. Talk about Candy Crowley. talk about nothing but Candy Crowley. This is the, you know, these are the memos that go out to the right-wing talk show hosts all over the country, the talking points for the day, essentially. Candy Crowley. It's going to be all about Candy Crowley. She did wrong. She shouldn't have corrected the candidate. So how dare she insert herself as a fact-checker? Why didn't she fact-check the president when he said something wrong? You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I would submit to you, frankly, in answer to that question, that the reason why she did say what she said was because Mitt Romney turned to the do you have a clip of that moment? Listen to this, and in that moment of incredulity in Mitt Romney's voice when he is saying, I just want this on the record that the president said this, or words to that effect, he was actually looking at Candy Crowley. He was looking at the moderator as if to say, okay, you're from the news. You better make note of the fact that this guy just said something that is wrong. And what's she supposed to say? I mean, he's looking at her. He's talking to her. So, you know, she says, well, what he said is true. Here it is.
Governor, if you want to reply quickly, please.
I think it's interesting. The president just said something, which is that on the day after the attack, he went in the Rose Garden and said that this was an act of terror. You said in the Rose Garden, the day after the attack, it was an act of terror. It was not a spontaneous demonstration. Is that what you're saying?
Please proceed, Governor.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of terror.
Can you say that a little louder, Candy?
Yeah. But Romney had walked right up to Candy Crowley. He was talking to her. So, you know, in any case, it's not about Candy Crowley. It's about 31 lies in 41 minutes. And I've just given you a few, some of the more egregious ones. There are fewer people working today than when the president came into office. Not true. Actually, there are net positive 125,000 jobs. Now, that's not a lot, but keep in mind, during the first few months, the Bush Great Depression was still going on. 800,000 people were losing their jobs every month. Took a while for that stimulus bill to get written and get put into law. Romney then said, I don't believe employers should tell everyone whether they have contraceptive care or not. Every woman in America should have access to contraceptives. That's a verbatim quote. But Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, Republican, introduced a bill that would allow employers to deny contraception coverage. And Mitt Romney said this, quote, of course I support the Blunt Amendment. Of course I support, I support that amendment. He said, I think all Americans should be allowed to get around this religious exemption. I clearly want to have a religious exemption from Obamacare. In other words, employers should be able to say, nah, we're not going to pay for your birth control on your health care plan. But last night he said the opposite. He said, I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they have contraceptive care or not. Take that, Catholic Church. Or for that matter, you know, hard right Protestant churches. Okay, Romney, another lie. He says, I'm not going to have people at the high end of the paid less than they're paying now. The top 5% of taxpayers will continue to pay 60% of the income tax. All right. According to the Center for American Progress's examination of Romney's tax plan, the top 10% will reap half of Romney's tax cut benefits. The top 1%, a third of them. And on it goes. Here's President Obama on Romney's sketchy deal. Clip number two, Shano.
If somebody came to you, Governor, with a plan that said, here, I want to spend $7 or $8 trillion, and we're going to pay for it, but we can't tell you until maybe after the election how we're going to do it, you wouldn't have taken such a sketchy deal. And neither should you, the American people.
Sketchy deal. Well, sketchy and the Arizona immigration line, clip number seven. Here we go.
He called the Arizona law a model for the nation. Part of the Arizona law said that law enforcement officers could stop folks because they suspected maybe they looked like they might be undocumented workers.
I did not say that the Arizona law was a model for the nation in that aspect. I said that the E-Verify portion of the Arizona law, which is the portion of the law which says that employers could be able to determine whether someone is here illegally or not illegally, that was a model for the nation.
His top advisor on immigration is the guy who designed the Arizona law, the entirety of it, not E-Verify, the whole thing.
And let us not forget that Romney's top advisor on who's going to get on the Supreme Court is Robert Bork. Robert Bork, for those of you too young to remember, was too extreme for Ronald Reagan to get onto the court. Robert Bork was the guy who said that women's rights should be subordinate to the law. In other words, Congress should be able to pass a law saying, women get paid half of what men do. That the Civil Rights Act is unconstitutional. I mean, Robert Bork is as extreme as he makes Scalia look like a moderate. Anyhow, here's Romney using the word foreign, trying to insert the word foreign. This was a dog whistle to the Fox News watchers who think that Obama is, from Kenya or something. Clip number 3.
We have a president talking about someone's plan in a way that's completely foreign to what my real plan is.
Right. Yeah. Foreign. Yeah. Let's get that word in there. Let's be sure to say that the president is foreign. He talks like a foreigner, you know? He's saying something that's foreign. So, anyhow, we got a lot more clips. I've got another out of the 31 lies. We've covered, maybe 6 of them? So, got a lot more to go. But I want to get you in on this as well. So, we'll pick up your calls right after the break. And you can share your thoughts with all of us, on what happened last night and your sense of where this is going to lead the election.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And Shano, in his infinite wisdom and caprice, at some point is going to call out one of our callers to get a free copy of the Tom Hartman Reader, autographed by me. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's amazing. What did you think of what was going on last night? Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great.
Listen,
but I'll get better, Corky.
I knew Obama won the debate without even watching the debate because I turned on the news this morning. And I listened to Fox News also.
Uh-huh.
And they're having a focus debate, a Frank Luntz type focus debate,
right,
on Candy Crowley.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's my whole point. If they can get people to pay attention to Candy Crowley instead of what Obama said or what Romney said, then they're trying to etch a sketch out this entire debate and replace the entire debate with the image of one CNN news person.
Yeah, it's how low are they going to go? I mean, this is just showing nothing more than outright hatred for Obama. It has nothing to do with policies.
I wouldn't go that far, Corky. I'd say that what they're doing, this is the old Lee Atwater strategy from the Reagan campaign, play the refs. They the referees in this case of the news media, I was just pulling up the New York Times. Thanks a lot for the call, by the way, Corky. I just pulled up the New York Times here to see if they had succeeded in getting it onto the homepage of the New York Times, did the moderator go too far or something like that? I don't see anything quite there yet, but it's all over all the right-wing media. I mean, this is all these folks are talking about. George in Tampa. Hey, George, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hey. So I've had I've voted in the past for Clinton, and I've also voted Republican. So I'm kind of, I guess in the middle and try to look objectively at the both sides and who's coming, with the.
Do you base your votes on how they smile or how they dress or what?
No. I mean, based on the, ideas that they have.
What idea did Bill Clinton have that you wanted to vote for?
Well, I mean, this is the point. I guess, I'm looking at this and I'm just trying to think objectively. And I just remember in the past, Romney said something. I don't remember if it was the first debate or if it was one of his speeches, but he said, I just finished this graduate level economics class, so it really struck a chord with me. And it said that, you know, he said to fix the deficit problem, you either have to grow taxes, increase taxes, excuse me, decrease spending, or grow the economy. And, right. You know, it just feels like, you know, looking at what's fairest for our country, you know, yeah, I think that there are people who can pay more and they, you know, and there's people who can pay less, but I just feel like his plan overall is more equitable than something that's going to just tax the most wealthy people, you know, in America.
Well, hang on just a second here, George. The back 2.5 years ago, the Democrats passed out of the House of Representatives a piece of legislation that would significantly grow the economy, that would have done away with the tax incentives that, for example, as we speak right now, it's going to end the day after the election. Sensata, a Bain-owned corporation, Bain bought this company. They've been manufacturing, it used to be a Raytheon plant. They've been manufacturing sensors for cars for decades. The average employee there is in their 50s, and they started in their 20s. These are good-paying American jobs, right? Good-paying jobs in America, good manufacturing jobs. Bain bought the company, said, we can make more money if we ship this, literally the factory. They're shipping the machines to China. They brought in the Chinese people on visas and had them trained by the Sensata workers, and then they're following them back there. The tax deduction that Bain will get, every penny of the cost of flying the Chinese over here to learn, the cost of packing up those machines, the cost of shipping those machines to China, every penny of that is tax deductible under the U.S. tax code right now to Bain Capital. Not only that, when they start manufacturing in China, they can keep their profits in China. And if they're selling to themselves, if they've got a U.S. operation here that's doing the retail selling to the auto manufacturers, and then they've got a manufacturing entity in China, they can sell to themselves at any price. So say that it's a sensor that costs, you know, $100 in a car, and it costs them $8 to manufacture. Well, instead of selling it from Sensata China to Sensata U.S. for $8, they can sell it from Sensata China to Sensata U.S. for $100, keep that $92 in profit in China, and never pay U.S. money, you know, income taxes on it. This is the game that these corporations, these multinational corporations, have been playing, and this is the game that Bain Capital has been playing. This is how Mitt Romney got rich, in part. And by the way, part of Mitt Romney's $20 million income last year came from Sensata, from this deal. Democrats passed a piece of legislation out of the House of Representatives that put an end to that. In fact, the president last night called for an end to those kinds of loopholes. The Republicans, it passed the House of Representatives. The Republicans filibustered it in the United States Senate. Had that happened, tens of thousands of manufacturing jobs would have been grown in the last 3 years. The economy would have grown. A year ago, the president put forward a jobs bill. Let's hire government employees. It was a jobs bill. And the Republicans filibustered it. I agree with you that one of the best, and with Mitt Romney and with Barack Obama, that one of the very best ways to get out of a deficit, this is how both Harry Truman and Dwight Eisenhower, Democrat and Republican, this is how they paid off the debt from World War II, which is 127% of GDP, far worse than we are right now. This is how they paid it off. They grew the economy. But the Republicans had this meeting the night that Obama was sworn into office. Right down the street here from where I'm sitting in the caucus room restaurant, there was 17 Republicans who sat there, along with Frank Luntz and Newt Gingrich. And Paul Ryan was in that meeting, and John Kyle. And there's a whole bunch of very powerful Republicans. And they swore a blood oath to each other, half a dozen senators. The rest of them were members of the House of Representatives. They swore basically a blood oath that they would block any efforts, anything that might succeed in getting Obama's financial agenda, bringing America back agenda to go forward. And for 2 months and one day, Obama had a supermajority in the Senate until Scott Brown was seated. For 2 months and one day, he had a supermajority, and he was able to get that stimulus passed that stopped us from losing 800,000 jobs a month, and now we've created over 5 million new jobs. But he hasn't been able to do anything since Scott Brown was seated, since the Republicans have been able to filibuster in the Senate. None of those pieces of legislation. So the Republican agenda is very, very clear, George. It's destroy the economy. And by the way, in the process, make the rich richer. It's the percentage of income that has gone to the very top, the top 1% now, have 41% of all the wealth in the United States. The bottom 60% of Americans have 2.3% of all the wealth in the United States. You're going to tell me there's something okay with that? That's the status quo that Mitt Romney wants.
Well, all I can say, and I'll end on this, is I just feel like at this point in time in our country's history that Romney, it seems to me, to be the right person at the right time.
Give me one reason why.
Because I feel like we are in a situation, you know, from a...
One serious reason.
Because I feel like he has broader experience and a host of...
You want a guy who has experience shrinking companies, laying off workers. I mean, I worked at Clear Channel when Bain took over Clear Channel. The first thing that happened, a wave of firing. It's company after company. This is what Bain does. Mitt Romney's business model is fire people and keep the money for himself.
Look, when these guys are elected, they're supposed to be good stewards with what we've given them, correct? I mean, they're working for us.
No.
I'm not just saying Romney.
I mean, they're supposed to be, but that's not the history of the Republican Party. If you look at what has happened since Reagan, under the Republican presidents, Reagan, Bush, and Bush, what you have seen is the rich get richer and the middle class get screwed.
We need to be more responsible. That's all. Our leaders need to be more responsible with the spending, and I think that needs to be cut back.
So you're going to trust a guy who tells 31 lies in 41 minutes to be more responsible. George, I just, you know, respectfully, I have to question your judgment. Josh, I don't have a city for you, Josh. Where are you calling from?
La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Ah, hey. So what's up?
How you doing? I just wanted to bring up a point on energy that Romney keeps... espousing. Every time he seems to go on stage, he says that he wants to make us energy independent. And then he says, well, North American energy independent.
Right.
Which, correct me if I'm wrong, but that isn't possible.
Well, yes and no. I have warned my audience on this a number of times. Look out for weasel words. And North American is a weasel word. There is an enormous amount of oil in Canada. There's an enormous amount of oil in Mexico. And you know, not to mention natural gas. And so if we want to base our economy on fossil fuels, which is insane, and if we want to be shipping enormous amounts of U.S. dollars to Canada and Mexico, which are just as foreign as China or Germany or you know, Mozambique, I mean, pick your country. If you want to increase the U.S. trade deficit, and you want to increase the amount of carbon that we're burning, and you want to increase our dependence on carbon fuels, then, yeah, Romney says we're going to make North American energy independence. He never said America. He said American independence, then he corrected himself. Here, listen to this clip.
Which is getting us energy independent. North America energy independence.
There you go. See, he knew. He couldn't, you know, if he said us energy independent, he's like, oh, wait a minute. That's a lie. I'm not trying to get us, America, you know, the United States of America, energy independent. I'm trying to get North America energy independent. In other words, Canada and Mexico. TransCanada is a Canadian corporation. They're the ones building the pipeline. They're the ones who are going to make the money. You know, the refineries are owned by, you know, like Dutch Shell and British Petroleum, BP. So
he flips that in several times when he brings up that point. But we would also have to keep all of that. All of those fossil fuels here, too, instead of exporting them.
Yeah, that would be a nice idea. And in fact, rather than even, I mean, let's just dial back. You know, if our number one export was not gasoline and diesel fuel, we wouldn't have to import as much raw oil either from Canada, Mexico, or Saudi Arabia, or Iraq. Gee, what a novel idea.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
But North American energy independent? I mean, just because Canada and Mexico are on the same continent doesn't mean that their economy is our economy. Obama last night was able to turn his back on Romney. I mean, in the last debate, Romney was doing the death stare at him continuously, never wavered his eyes. He looked like a robotic psychopath through the entire debate, just staring Obama down no matter what he said. So, which has got to be incredibly distracting. So last night, you know, Romney tried that, and Obama simply turned his back on him and talked to the audience on the other side of the room and was able to, you know, ignore who's this crazy guy over here, right? And so what does Romney do then? He tries to walk into his private space. Now, the Republicans were all over criticizing Al Gore for that. You think they're going to criticize Mitt Romney for it? Somehow I doubt it. Dan in Bolingbrook, Illinois. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Well, observations about the way Romney treats the moderators.
Mm-hmm.
In the first debate, when he decided he picked on PBS for the funding, that accounts for like 1/10,000th of the budget.
Right.
But amazingly enough, that's where Jim Lehrer works. He was threatening his job.
Yeah, well, not only that, he tried to do the same thing last night. He said, "Wait a minute, I get the last word here," you know, and to Jim Lehrer, and then he forced the last word down his throat. He tried to do the same thing with Candy Crowley. From Mitt Romney's point of view, this is a guy who was born a multimillionaire, grew up a multimillionaire, went to private schools his entire life, you know, had a reputation as a bully, you know, took that probably gay kid and cut his hair and made fun of him, all that kind of stuff. He's looking at Candy Crowley. He's looking at Jim Lehrer. He's looking at any moderator. He's looking at them as the help, right?
Right. Well, what he did with Candy Crowley, though, when he was standing over her, you know, basically demanding that she get on the record that the president misspoke in the Rose Garden, he was threatening her professionalism. She knew better. She had to say something.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The point, you know, this whole thing about it's all about Candy Crowley. Basically, when he was coming on the Benghazi issue, he walked all the way across the stage right up toward Candy Crowley. And so, of course, she responded. What do you expect? Steve in Haymarket, Virginia. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I think Al Gore might very well have been right about Barack Obama being without air. So, in other words, Mitt Romney's gotten all A's and B's throughout his college and high school career, and the records are available. But Barack Obama
The records
Obama's
are available? Steve, I'm not going to go there. This is a joke. This is a joke. People try to call into this program with jokes. Mike in Saginaw, Michigan. Hey, Mike, what's on? What's up?
Not much. How you doing, Tom?
Great.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up, you know, Mitt talks jobs, and how he's got this great record, but I don't understand why Obama's not just hammering him on that he's, you know, Massachusetts was 47th out of 50 states on job growth. It's just...
Oh, there were so many things that Obama could have said last night that he didn't, and that's certainly on the list. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that you have only got so much time, and you got to deal with what's in front of you. And you did have a moderator who was, you know, trying to bring the topic back. Steve in Warwick, Massachusetts. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom. I'd like to make a comment about this binders full of women comment that Mitt Romney made.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird visual image.
All right. Well, the actual truth was... is back during the campaign when he was running for governor with our aide against Shannon O'Brien and stuff. There was a women's group, you know, that were meeting with both candidates.
Right. It was actually a coalition of women's groups.
A binder full of women, our aide to both women and stuff, because they wanted more women on high level state jobs.
Right. Yeah.
And
Romney.
So he didn't go solicit them. And so they went to him during the campaign, and they just threw it in the back room kind of stuff. You know,
right.
Yeah, because I know people that were working on the campaign that said that.
Huh. So, yeah, this was another one of the big lies that Romney told, that he wanted to have more women in his cabinet, and so he reached out and he got this binder full. Well, the binder, you're right, was put together by a coalition of women's groups long before they even knew who was going to be governor. Daryl in Lake Oswego, Oregon. Hey, Daryl, what's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk about the Romney tax cuts.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of friends that I debate with that are Republicans, and when we talk about it, I ask them what the purpose of the tax cuts are, and they always say, well, to cut the taxes. But I explain to them when you listen to the debates that Romney says that he's offsetting those tax cuts with reducing deductions.
Right.
And if that's the case... There's only really one purpose that you can, or one conclusion you can come to, and that is that what he's doing is he's shifting the tax burden.
Yeah, yeah, from the very rich to the middle class, because the majority of, I mean, there are two big tax cuts, right, or arguably three big tax breaks. There's one tax break, which is the capital gains tax, which lets Mitt Romney pay a maximum 15% income tax rate, and Paris Hilton and people like that, right? That one Mitt Romney is not going to touch. He thinks that's perfectly fair, as he told Steve Croft, I think it was, on 60 Minutes. The other two are the child deduction for having kids and the home mortgage deduction, you know, which is capped at $1.1 million. And those are virtually entirely used by the middle class. You know, rich people pay cash for their houses, and they don't take a tax deduction for it. And, you know, they don't need the $2,000 or $3,000 or whatever it is these days that you can take off your taxes for having kids. And so, yeah, Romney is going to do away with that. And it's incredible. Kim in Mooresville, Indiana. Kim, just a minute here, a very quick.
Oh, okay. Hey, Tom, I have a real moral dilemma here. I know you can help me with it. I watch the debates. I'm very political. I'm a geek like that. And my morals and values lie with Dr. Stein, who was handcuffed to a chair during the debates last yep. night. And I want to know, I respect your opinion greatly, Tom, and I really want to write, and here in Indiana I have to write her in, and that's what I really want to do, but I don't want Romney in.
Here's what I would do, Kim. If you are really genuinely that passionate about it, I would strongly suggest that, first of all, I don't think you want Mitt Romney appointing two more Supreme Court justices, minimum. Secondly, if you want to see Jill Stein's politics played on a national stage, show up at the Democratic Party, volunteer to be or run for a precinct committee person, and start bringing those ideas into the Democratic Party.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So 27 myths, lies in 38 minutes. That's the old record. Last night it got beat. 31 myths in 41 minutes. 31 lies in 41 minutes. Pell Grants, funding, women's issues. This actually, President Obama had a pretty good rebuttal for this. Clip number four here. This is a good one. Listen to this.
These are family issues. These are economic issues. And one of the things that makes us grow as an economy is when everybody participates and women are getting the same fair deal as men are.
There you go. These are not things you're going to hear on right-wing talk radio, by the way. You're going to hear all about Candy Crowley because it's all they want to talk about. But this, there were some important topics brought up. Clip number five here. This is about President Obama talking about Mitt Romney and China. Listen to this.
When he talks about getting tough on China, keep in mind that Governor Romney invested in companies that were pioneers of outsourcing to China and is currently investing in countries, in companies that are building surveillance equipment for China to spy on its own folks. Governor, you're the last person who's going to get tough on China.
And at that point, I'm yelling at the TV going, Sensata! Sensata! Mention Sensata! The day after the election, they're going to ship the last piece of equipment off to China. Bain Capital is doing that, and Mitt Romney is still making tens of millions of dollars a year from Bain Capital and only paying 14% income tax. And it would have been actually 8 or 9 or 10% if he actually took the charitable deduction that he will take next year, I guarantee you. Next year, he's going to probably pay 6%. Who knows? But it's going to be in that neighborhood. George W. Bush, the ghost of George W. Bush came up last night, and this was a particularly fascinating one. You know, Mitt Romney's first name is Willard. Mitt is his middle name. We should start calling him W. Mitt Romney to remind us of George W. Bush. So here's President Obama talking about W. Mitt Romney when the question was asked of W. Mitt Romney, how are you going to be different from George W. Bush?
There are some things where Governor Romney is different from George Bush. George Bush didn't propose turning Medicare into a voucher. George Bush embraced comprehensive immigration reform. He didn't call for self-deportation. George Bush never suggested that we eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood. So there are differences between Governor Romney and George Bush, but they're not on economic policy. In some ways, he's gone to a more extreme place when it comes to social policy.
Indeed. And then, you know, Mitt Romney, this toward the very end, this clip number nine, this was the part that, you know, as soon as Romney in his what he knew was going to be his last statement, he had been waiting all night long for Obama to mention the 47% so he could come back and say, no. I want 100%. But Obama never mentioned 47%. So Romney had this, he was all primed for it. He was just like, yeah, you got to get it out. So this is what he said.
In the course of that, I think the president's campaign has tried to characterize me as someone who's very different than who I am. I care about 100% of the American people. I want 100% of the American people to have a bright and prosperous future.
Right. So thank you, Mr. Romney, for raising that percent issue. Mr. Obama, President Obama, ends the debate with this.
But I also believe that when he said behind closed doors that 47% of the country considered themselves victims who refused personal responsibility, think about who he was talking about. Folks on Social Security who've worked all their lives. Veterans who've sacrificed for this country. Students who are out there trying to hopefully advance their own dreams, but also this country's dreams. Soldiers who are overseas fighting for us right now. People who are working hard every day, paying payroll tax, gas taxes, but don't make enough income. And I want to fight for them. That's what I've been doing for the last 4 years, because if they succeed, I believe the country succeeds.
And by the way, that's what history shows, is that when the middle class grows, when the middle class is solid, when you don't have Republicans blocking every piece of legislation that would bring jobs back home, that would encourage manufacturing and production here in the United States rather than offshore, that would cause corporations to stop being able to shelter the taxable income offshore. When the middle class grows, the economy grows, tax collections go up, the deficit gets smaller. The country gets better. People do better. I mean, it's common sense stuff. My personal favorite of the night was clip number 12 here. And in part because yesterday I had a caller. If you caught this part of the show yesterday, I had some caller call up and go, "Oh, you know, President, he's been lying to us about Libya." And of course, you know, Fox and the right wing machine have been amping on this thing for weeks, because they think they've got a whitewater here, right? They think that they've, you know, that somebody made a mistake. It's just like Daryl Issa with Fast and Furious, you know, a program that was started under George W. Bush. Somehow that never gets mentioned in the Foxosphere. But they tried it with that, and then, you know, an actual report was done, and they said, no, there's nothing there. Eric Holder didn't even know about it until it hit the press. And, you know, because it was left over from the Bush administration. And similarly, now the right thinks that, you know, if mark my words, if the president is reelected, and I think that there's a good chance he will be, and Indrade does too, if he gets reelected, this is what they're going to try and impeach him over. If the Republicans can maintain control of the House of Representatives, is they're going to say that somehow somebody failed with regard to Libya. Now, I didn't hear any Democrats politicizing 9/11. I was calling for it, not in the immediate weeks afterwards. You know, in fact, I wasn't on the air in the immediate weeks afterwards. We started the show about a year after that. But I was certainly a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years to this day, I'm saying, you know, somebody should be held accountable for that intelligence failure that led to the death of over 3,000 Americans. And is leading to the death of, you know, over 10,000 Americans when you include the first responders, who the Bush administration lied to about the quality of air down there. But Democrats, you know, never tried to politicize that. They never said, "Oh yeah, you know, we're gonna show how bad the Bush administration is. You know, 9/11 is the biggest intelligence failure in history." They were warned, which is true, by the way, in March or April of that year, President Bush of 2001, President Bush had gone to the Mediterranean. I believe it was Italy. It was one of the Mediterranean countries. For a G8 or G7 or whatever it was back at that point in time, for one of those economic meetings. And instead of staying in the hotel with all the other heads of state, he stayed on an aircraft carrier. Why? This was in the news. You could read this in the New York Times and, you know, or on some conservative publication. He stayed on that aircraft carrier because there were credible reports that Al-Qaeda was trying to hijack commercial airliners and use them as flying bombs to fly into the hotel that Obama was staying in. So they put him on an aircraft carrier. Condoleezza Rice testified about this to Congress. This was 8 months before 9/11 or 6 months before 9/11. It never, and then after 9/11, Condoleezza Rice says, nobody could have ever imagined that they would use a commercial jet as a flying bomb. No, wait a minute. Condi was with him, stayed on that aircraft carrier with him. Because, the, you know, it's like, wait a minute. So here's Obama. Do we have time to play this clip? Here's Obama talking about politicization of disasters.
And the suggestion that anybody in my team, whether the Secretary of State, our UN ambassador, anybody on my team would play politics or mislead when we've lost four of our own, Governor, is offensive.
Yeah, and yesterday when that, you know, right-wing bozo called the show and tried to basically say, you know, something wrong with the Obama administration, I called it pathetic.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But I think offensive is a much better word. It really is offensive. We'll be back.
Just what the truth is, Mitt can't speak anymore, and he's above you. Yes, Mitt's above you.
Kenny, I get the last word here. Shut up, Mr. President. And, you know, right. Dusty in Clinton Township, Michigan. Hey, Dusty, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I watched last night, and Mr. Romney cannot hide his contempt for women, even when he's trying to show he's in favor of them.
Well, hang on just a second, Dusty. He was very clear that he wants to be sure that women can get home in time to make dinner.
Yes. He pointed that out, that he made special allowances after he went looking for qualified women. It
right.
might surprise him that there are some men who also want to spend time with their family, their kids, and want to know what time they're going to get off work.
Who'll cook dinner?
And that there.
One of my brothers is a house husband. God bless him.
And there's some men who teach Little League or lead their youth choir or bowl on Tuesdays. Not every man is a workaholic, but, and some women are.
Yeah.
I was for 40 some years. It was a mistake. He even indicated that he would raise the economy so much that employers would even be willing to hire women.
Mm-hmm.
No many jobs.
Right.
Are we going to live to work? Or are we going to work to live?
Yeah.
And, speaking of sometimes the best man for the job is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, Candy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Dusty. Thanks. And thank you very much. And thanks for watching on Free Speech TV. Oops, I just made the mistake of hitting the wrong button. Hold on. Okay, John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. John, are you there? Somehow, I got to figure out this software. I'm going to put John on hold, and I'm going to bring him back on. John, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
great.
I can hear you.
We have new call screen software, and I'm just, you know, learning how it works. So my apologies to the occasional kerfuffle. What's up?
Sure, I'll make it really brief. I lived in the oil patch in the Four Corners region of New Mexico in the early 1980s, and the oil boom busted. And I think these oil companies are only interested in the bottom line, and
of course
they don't care if they have to, you know, get the oil from Saudi Arabia or Iran or Iraq or wherever. It's all about price, and they could care less about the energy security of this country. Not only was there a lot of problems with the oil and gas, my wife worked for a regulatory agency, they ruined the water supply in a desert area for many people. People were being poisoned by benzene. There was also strip mining of coal. Mm. We had a legacy of uranium mining in the area. You know, we need to get clean energy. It's just a health problem. I worked with people who were dying of all kinds of unusual cancers as a result of a lot of this process. And this happens, I would say, in any area where there is a lot of mining for energy. And that's all I wanted to say. But these companies, they could care less about this country.
Yeah.
They're international companies, and they have no loyalty to any one nation. You know, Dutch Shell, I'm sure, you know, they're not exactly a good citizens, even in Holland. British Petroleum, the same. And then American energy companies are notoriously terrible as far as their legacy.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And part of that is the sociopathy of the corporate form. Thank you, John, for the point. But, you know, by definition, corporations are sociopaths. They have one single purpose, and that's profit. And you know, to hell with the people. Bob in Chicago. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, first of all, I recall that Condi Rice, the 9/11 commission, said that she did not recall ever saying Al-Qaeda to George Bush. But my point is, well, for Ed, Fox was right when they say that if you're talking about the moderator, you've lost. Of course, they said that last week, not this week.
Yes.
But I just like to say we've got to get this out. Attention, Obama campaign headquarters. Listen to Tom when he talks about that meeting on the first day of Obama's presidency. The GOP gave them all, what, a few hours to fix George Bush's 8 years of problems?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is truly extraordinary. In fact, I'm digging through my keeper stack here to find that actual article. And
focus group after focus group, when you talk to them, everyone hates Congress.
Here it
is. Their number one complaint is they get nothing done. And the media makes everyone believe that, it's both sides. How do we know where this started? If Obama would have said this in the debate last night, game over.
Right.
Swing
so
voters
for,
would all be like, wait, they did that to him on his first day? Now, I mean, Who can't see that as irrational?
Yep. Now, for those people who don't, and Paul, Bob, thank you very much for opening this up for me, for, you know, setting this up, because you are absolutely right. This is, Robert Draper wrote a book called Do Not Ask What Good We Do Inside the U.S. House of Representatives. And it just came out, you know, like a month or so ago. Robert Draper is a respected author and historian. He's got no political axe to grind. And he talks about on January 20th, 2009, 14 Republican leaders in Congress literally plotted to sabotage and undermine the U.S. economy. Now, this is a Keep Them Honest's blog over at Daily Kos, you know, paraphrasing this, but This is the group that met. They met at the Caucus Room restaurant right down the street from here over at the corner of 9th and D. Louise and I used to live at the corner of 8th and D. I mean, it literally is this back end of the building that we lived in. And we'd walk by there and all the time see, you know, drunken congressmen being carried out by legislators or, you know, cute young things. Frank Luntz, Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Henserling, Pete Hoekstra, Dan Lundgren, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Tom Coburn, John Ensign, Bob Corker, and Newt Gingrich got together in a private room the night that Obama was sworn in. And afterwards, Representative Pete Sessions said that they had to start behaving like the Taliban. He said, Taliban insurgency is how you disrupt and change a person's entire process, and we need to understand that insurgency may be required when dealing with the other side, with the Democrats. And Newt Gingrich, on his way out of that room, said, you have seen the seeds of 2012 planted here. You'll remember this is the day the seeds of 2012 were sown. That's his exact phrase.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Now, I would rephrase that to say that you'll remember that as the day that Newt Gingrich and Paul Ryan and a bunch of members of Congress committed treason. Today's show is underwritten by my favorite investigative reporter, Greg Palast, and his new bestseller, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. Greg Palast investigates Karl Rove, the Koch gang, and their buck buddies. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Your thoughts, my thoughts, the news of the day, some clips from what's going on. By the way, here, clip number 13, this is the president on the day after the Benghazi incident. This is the president speaking in the Rose Garden on the day after the Benghazi incident. And by the way, Romney said that Obama flew out to Las Vegas for a fundraiser. It was not a fundraiser. It was a campaign rally. And then he said he flew on to another fundraiser. It wasn't a fundraiser. Romney might have been doing fundraisers, but Obama wasn't. But so, you know, another lie. In any case, here's President Obama. The day
no after. Acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation, alter that character, or eclipse the light of the values that we stand for. Today we mourn for more Americans who represent the very best of the United States of America.
There you go. So, Nikki in Niantic, Connecticut. Do I have that right, Nikki?
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. What's up?
You remember after the vice presidential debate, the right went crazy and said that Joe Biden was a bully and he was drunk and all of these other things.
Smiled too much.
They're awfully quiet today about how Mitt just bullied everybody. He bullied the president. He bullied the moderator. He didn't answer a direct question from the audience. Mm-hmm. He just rolled over people like we're all peons in his world.
Well, we are. I mean, this is a guy who was, you know, born on third base and thought he hit a triple. You're absolutely right. Nikki, thank you for the call. Well said. Ian in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Ian, what's up?
Hey, Tom. It's nice to be on your show, man. Good work, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's familiar with Zimbabwe. I'm from Zimbabwe. Asylum seeker from Zimbabwe. Been in the United States for 18 years.
Robert Mugabe's still running that show down there.
I started up two businesses. And I employed a lot of Americans whose homes were going through foreclosure. Mm. And I happened to get pulled over for a busted traffic light by our local police, which led to them calling Homeland Security on me. And they put me through deportation processes and shipped me to El Paso, Texas for a month. And I stayed in the deportation facility. And they only gave me one option, which was voluntary deportation, try to force me to sign the papers, and I refused. And I had to get my community. While I was in the jail with a $3 phone card, I had to call people on the outside to try to raise money for my attorney fees to get out. Wow. And I finally raised the attorney fees and paid a higher immigration attorney, and I've been set free. But I've been set free with the conditions that I'm not able to engage in any form of employment. I cannot seek any sort of assistance to feed myself. I should just be out in the world trying to survive on air. And right. I think that the policies of the Republicans, they encourage that kind of treatment of immigrants. And if they do have to put out this open day on immigrants, undocumented immigrants, they're going to be hunting us like game.
In fact,
people should really listen to the way these people are talking, you know, the Republicans.
I agree. And in fact, some have advocated that. Ian, you can't, for people who don't know Zimbabwe, it's a country in the south, eastern side of Africa that is, correct me if I'm wrong, that is run by a guy named Robert Mugabe, who is just nuts. And, you know, dictator Mugabe. Why, when you came to the United States, did you not seek political asylum?
I was in fear of reporting myself because I would have still been put through this same process if I had reported myself when I arrived.
So that was not a country that we were, you know, unlike, for example, if you try to come from Cuba, that was not a country where we were saying, okay, he's a bad guy, we'll accept their people.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry to hear that. Ian, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your story with us. You're right, the Republicans are so anti-immigrant, and it's... Enough said. Jeff in Sharpsburg, Georgia. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Great. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to make a comment about this whole gas price debate that Mitt Romney is trying to put against Obama.
Yeah.
I don't understand why Obama doesn't turn around and say, hey, the summer before I took office, the gas prices were at $4.40 a gallon.
Right.
And, you know, why doesn't he just turn around and say that to him? It's like... the Republicans just feel that we don't have any memory of anything that happened before Obama took office, and it's so frustrating.
Well, I think Obama, you know, by saying that the reason that the gas prices were so low when he took office was because we were in a, you know, free fall into a depression, basically. He was assuming that the average American was smart enough to have remembered that in the last year of the Bush administration, gas prices were pushing over $4. And, you know,
all those hurricanes came through and everything was up. I remember there were lines out the door and people were paying $4.50 a gallon down in Georgia.
Yeah.
Yet no one, I'm amazed you didn't mention that because that would easily, in my opinion, totally stifled.
No, I'm with you, Jeff, and he should have. Thanks for the call. He should have, or he could have said something about that. You've got to, you know, it's awful hard to Monday morning quarterback this stuff. I could tell you, you know, I'll go home after doing this show, and I'll debate some conservative or some caller or whatever, and I'll think, damn, I should have said that. You know, it's like it is so easy to Monday morning quarterback, and I think we need to. Well, it's okay. I was going to say resist the impulse. It's all right. Jerry in Algonquin, Illinois. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Hey, how are you? First of all, I'm 21 years old and I'm an independent. I don't have any political ties, and I have two points to make, and I want you to hear me out on both of them before you chime in, so I can get them both across. They're very important.
It depends on how long you take.
Okay, I'll make it quick. The first one was one of the questions that got through. I don't know how it got through. Was what will you do to benefit illegal immigrants that benefit the country? I don't know how illegal immigrants are benefiting. They don't pay federal income tax. They don't pay state income tax. They don't pay property tax.
Actually, most of those who have a job and have a home are paying all of those taxes.
I don't see how, because if they're not citizens of the
they
U.S.
They use a phony Social Security number and they do it. I mean, it's well documented. There's billions, tens of billions of dollars in money that is in taxes that are collected every year from people who are illegal immigrants. And I'm not an advocate of illegal immigration. I actually stand with Mitt Romney on self deportation. I wrote a chapter in one of my books about this 2 years ago, suggesting that if we don't have an illegal immigrant problem, we have an illegal employer problem in the United States. And if employers were prosecuted for hiring people who are not citizens of the United States, people would stop coming here looking for looking for work, and you would stop seeing, you know, that cheap labor market existing, and then the labor market would gradually recover in the United States. So, you know, I don't get the gotcha in your question. What kind of point are you trying to make?
Well, another point is most of them don't have insurance. So we are the taxpayers of America are paying for their health needs. One other thing, if I could quickly, is this is on the other side, is the Arizona law that says, you know, if you look like an immigrant, we can search you. It completely dismantles the Fourth Amendment, which is illegal search and seizure. That's just like saying, you know, you look like a Muslim, so we're going to suspect you're a terrorist. You're black, so maybe, you know, you've committed some kind of crime. That's completely ludicrous.
Right. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. Okay. Move along. Kurt in Geneseo, Illinois. Hey, Kurt, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for all you do. Hey, I just had just some concerns about this Keystone Pipeline and how it relates to just the potential for an environmental disaster. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that pipeline it's directed to come down through the Dakotas, through Nebraska, Oklahoma, Kansas? Am I correct on that?
I don't have a map in front of me. That's the general area of the geography, but I can't
Nebraska,
see.
In that part of the country, the water supply system, which is just an absolute life source for that region and on that huge aquifer system.
Yeah, it's the Ogallala Aquifer is what you're talking about, and it's the largest aquifer in the United States, and the pipeline does go right over the middle of that, yes.
What do they propose in terms of precautionary measures as far as, I mean, if that thing were to contaminate that aquifer, it would be an absolute mass exodus of people.
It would be mass deaths. you'd have people, they couldn't sell their house for anything. They'd have to drink contaminated water. I mean, you would have a disaster. You're absolutely right. And what is the protection? The protection is, hey, there's this big corporation. It's a transnational corporation. It's called TransCanada. It's based out of Canada. They owe no allegiance to the United States. They're building this pipeline across the United States so that, you know, they can get their very, very toxic oil down to the Gulf Coast where they can refine it, throw all the poison, instead of keeping the poison in Canada, instead of refining up in Canada. They don't want to do that. That would really stink up the rest of Canada, right? The downwind would be Toronto and Montreal, the big cities. They don't want to have anything to do with that. So they send it down to the Gulf Coast, refine it in Texas, let the largely African American and poor communities that are downwind to the east, just, you know, north of the Gulf Coast, let them be the ones, you know, let's have a new cancer alley here. and then we can export the gasoline and diesel fuel. And so the, in answer to your question, how, you know, what are we going to do about making sure that this pipeline is safe and doesn't leak? And by the way, this is the most corrosive form of oil known to man or known to humankind. The answer is really simple. We're going to trust a Canadian transnational corporation to take care of it and do it right. What could go wrong? Right? What could go wrong? I mean, you know, it's a brilliant idea. Kurt, I think you, I'm guessing you share my sarcasm. Thank you for the call. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if you visit TomHartman.com, you can drop into our live chat room and hang out with some of the finest minds on earth. And we're going to be giving away a copy of the Tom Hartman Reader today.
Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? Ain't that news?
Ain't that news? Ain't yeah, that good news? I think so. Today's Talk Radio News Report, Service Report, brought to you by the efforts of Free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at free-don.org. And Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. Hey, Ellen.
Well, we're in recovery from debate over here. The president has been in President Obama has been in Iowa and the great state of Ohio. Uh-huh. He's been wearing a pink rubber bracelet for Breast Cancer Month. Governor Romney in Virginia. Paul Ryan has been introduced by Condoleezza Rice in Ohio. They've been talking about how women have been hurt by the economy, and it's interesting that they are really trying to push the women's issue in Ohio. But that's where
that's because
you
know women are the last swing voters, it seems, one of the big swing voters blocks.
That's right. And the Democratic National Committee today had a call on the Lilly Ledbetter Act and the notebook situation, which, of course, the
mass binders?
Government. I'm sorry?
The binders?
The binders, that's
yes.
Right.
Pardon me.
The Massachusetts Government Appointment Project said that they had given these binders, they had them ready before the election of either the Democrat or Republican. The Daily Beast called the binder issue the gift that keeps on giving.
Right. And over at TPM, there's a story about how the Republicans, how Rance Priebus immediately started talking about how Obama's binder is empty when he's got, you know, jobs programs, this, that, and the other thing. Apparently the, you know, this must have been focus group by Frank Luntz or something, but apparently the Republican strategy before the debate was to introduce the word binder into the debate somehow and then take that metaphor and use it. But it seems to be boomeranging on them, particularly since Romney lied about where the binder came from.
Right. The fog of years or something like that.
Who knows? Yeah.
But they should have researched that. Also, your friends at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they are having an election sort of predate. They're having Rudy Giuliani talking about legal reform summit on all kinds of issues dealing with legal reform, including mergers and acquisitions. Why am I not surprised?
Mm.
The other two people that they're having, and it's next Wednesday, is Rick Santorum and Scott Rasmussen.
Huh. Okay.
Obviously, they're trying to say, that this is going to be sort of another meme that we're going to see dribble out having to do with legal reform and why is the president against this and all that.
Right. Tort reform raises its ugly head again.
The Secretary of Agriculture, Vilsack, a former governor of Iowa, said that the farm bills are not having a farm bill and that the House not doing that before they recess for the election could cost milk going up to $6 a gallon. It is $3.50 today on an average, but he was talking about that.
Wow.
Also, the FBI arrested a man in connection with allegedly trying to bomb the Federal Reserve in New York. He believed he had a bomb in his car. He drove his car to the Federal Reserve, and apparently it was obviously a sting operation. He was arrested.
Wow. Wow.
Some other interesting news, some good news. U.S. construction has gone up 15% since last month.
Wow.
So that is, it's the highest since July of 08, 872,000 new starts, both homes and multifamily homes, in that seasonally adjusted number. Pretty good news.
This is residential construction?
Yes, mainly residential. That's right.
That's pretty impressive, particularly given the inventory of existing houses that are out there. That's pretty impressive.
Very impressive, actually. Just another non-political kind of thing. The Do Not Call Registry has now 217 million people who have put in their phone numbers. Some may be multiple phone numbers, but 217 million entries. The Federal Trade Commission also got 3.8 million complaints about getting unwanted Do Not Call lists. And remember yesterday we talked about Representative Waxman and the antibiotics. Well, today he's out with a new report on what Medicare cuts under the Ryan budget would do to his constituency. 1.4 million people who have Medicare would lose preventive care benefits, and there would be 100,000 people who would lose their ability to really access, without paying a lot of money, Medicare Part D, which is the prescription drug program. So he also said that cuts in nursing home care in his district alone would impact the people in nursing homes by $11,000 per person during that period of time.
Well,
and food costs would go up to $53,000 for 53,000 households.
But you got to stop these people from being dependent upon the government, Ellen. I mean, you know, plus this is unconstitutional. Just ask Robert Bork, Governor Romney's chief advisor on judicial nominees, who he's going to put on the Supreme Court. This is, you know, all this stuff is clearly unconstitutional. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. So what if you paid into it all your life? It's unconstitutional, and besides that, that makes you a freeloader.
It is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have time for one or two more here.
Yeah, we have another minute.
Okay, so the UN Secretary General talked about North Star 4 today. A UNAMED patrol person who was actually from South Africa is dead because they were doing a patrol in the area and it was completely attacked. They have called on our friend Mr. Bashir, not our friend, and to control what's going on there, but it's really reduced to complete lawlessness in that area of Sudan.
Wow. Is that,
and,
now,
you know, we were in that area, not exactly in that north area, but as you know, you were there too.
Yeah, I'm trying to place where it is relative to Gok Machar, where you and I were when,
right.
You know, it's in the, in that direction of Darfur over in that part.
It's a little further north.
A little further north, up toward Sudan itself.
That's right.
Yikes. Okay. And Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
And the Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, Don Siegelman. Go to free-don.org. Coming up next, Jamie Weinstein, senior editor of the Daily Caller, the Lizard King.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Speaking of which, my friend Jamie Weinstein is with us, the senior editor of the Daily Caller, dailycaller.com, a great conservative website.
Thank you for having me. It is great.
Great to have you here with us. And you have a new book out with Will Ron. It's called The Lizard King.
That's right.
You've been talking to Alex Jones. You know about this story about how Bill Clinton gets up every morning and zips on his human suit?
Yeah, we discovered the truth, Tom. We have finally found the truth, published it in writing in an ebook. The truth is out there, and now it's out there for everybody.
And it's the truth about Obama.
Yeah, it's about the world around us.
Told by a real liberal.
Right, yeah. This was a gentleman who was in the Obama administration. He's in Thailand somewhere, and he sent us a manuscript. And all we did was edit it slightly. And now give it to the readers.
So what is the truth, Jamie?
Well, I don't want to give the whole thing away, but it's beyond what you can imagine. We investigate this you know, former Obama staffer and opposition researcher, investigated all the conspiracies about President Obama,
Right.
And shockingly discovered they were all true. But even that is not as crazy as what the truth turns out to be when they confront the president in the Oval Office.
Wow. So he really is a secret Muslim?
Yes. Although he did convert to Christianity in Hawaii. He wasn't born in Hawaii.
He was born in Kenya, Wyoming.
Right. But he, you know, he gets confronted by Rahm Emanuel. He's a little upset. Why did you lie that you were born in Honolulu, Hawaii? And he said, you know, I didn't lie. I was born again in Honolulu, Hawaii. That's where he became a Christian.
Of course.
Right.
Okay. This is now, you know, for people who think that this is a tongue-in-cheek book. This is a satire book.
That's what some are saying. I will not confirm or deny. All I'm saying is that it's very illuminating, and I encourage the readers to go out and buy it.
Okay. Yeah, I do too. I have not all the way through the book, but I have started it, and it is hysterical. And the book is The Lizard King by Jamie Weinstein.
And let me say this. I think both liberals and conservatives will be interested in what comes out of this. This is not just a single
I'm a liberal. I thought it was, you know, a satire is transpartisan, you know, if it's done well. And it's
first goal is to be funny.
Yes, absolutely. But I'm just curious your take on what happened last night and where the presidential election is at. We haven't talked in quite some time. I mean, you've been working on this book for a while.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I would give a slight edge to Obama last night in the debate, I think.
Just a slight edge?
Yeah. I don't think it was anything like the first debate. I think it was a slight, and I think the polls bore that out, the instant polls afterwards, that there was a slight number more people that thought Obama won the debate than Romney. I thought Romney might have been a little too aggressive at parts. I think that's where he erred. He went back at that one point to that oil question. Yeah. The China, his investments in China, which seemed to come out of the blue. I mean, I think he should have let that go.
I kept waiting for the president to yell, Sensata! Sensata! You know, the Bain Capital right now, as we speak, is packing up the machinery from Sensata Technologies to ship to China.
I talked to someone at Bain Capital that this idea that Romney was orchestrated. First of all, I think you should defend that sometimes that offshoring or outsourcing is necessary. But I talked to someone at Bain Capital at the time, and
it's only necessary if you get tax breaks for it.
Yeah, he said the idea that Romney was the mind behind trying to ship everything overseas is just nonsense. But beyond that, I thought that Obama did much better, obviously, than the first debate. The question is, how much will it matter? And I'm not so sure. I think, and we're way too early to say this. We have to look at how the polls turn out here coming forward, how they play. We might say that if Romney wins this election, that everything was over after the first debate, that people saw Romney in that debate. He wasn't this toxic creature that President Obama and his campaign tried to paint him as during the summer and decided, you know what, during a down economy, he doesn't seem as bad as the president said he is. We can trust him.
I think a lot's going to depend on how many people are watching last night, because that toxic creature came out last night. I mean, like the Lizard King, you know, he unzipped his human suit and the lizard kept popping out. You know, Mitt Romney, oh, yeah, women, we really are worried about women's rights. We're going to make sure they can get home in time to make dinner.
Actually, I didn't like his answer on that. My answer.
Surprise.
My answer would have been much more less. You know, political. No, political, actually.
Okay.
Mine might be even worse. I would have said, you know, the question that you're bringing up, I know that you get it from the media, but it's a myth. The gender pay gap no longer really exists. About 98% women get to what men get. It's almost entirely a race and mainly explained through women taking time out of work to have children.
Actually, the study that you're quoting has been debunked.
Well, that's not from what Christine Hoff Sommer said and many other scholars of this.
I've been around, you know, with Kerry Lucas on this, you know, 3-4 times. I got the paperwork.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I would just say that this is not the 1950s. It's not the 1960s.
Certainly it's not the 50s.
And more women are graduating college today than men. This idea that, you know, women are routinely discriminated against, I think it probably happens in certain circumstances. I just don't think it's the norm today.
A lot of them. And things are getting better. We'll agree on that.
I think you dislike my answer more than Romney's. I think Romney's was much more political.
I suppose. Romney told, 31 lies in 41 minutes?
I'd like to see what they describe as lies.
There you go.
Yeah, this is a thing progress, of course. I'm sure that they came up with their list of lies. Some things, what they describe as lies, is a, you know, difference of opinion. For instance, the tax, the $5 trillion plan. Of course, there is a Princeton study by a Princeton economist who says that it is not mathematically impossible. The question is,
yeah, most
how much
of those
growth,
studies that
how
Romney
much,
is,
how much growth is the question.
Most of those studies that Romney was quoting were blog posts.
No, well, not the Princeton.
Three out of the
not
six the, of them. And the, in the last not, debate, he said, I got six studies. Three of them were blog posts.
Not the Princeton study. The Princeton study is a paper. And it
done by what, a grad student?
No, it's done by an economist at Princeton. Actually, my friend who went to Princeton, he was one of his professors there. Harry Rosen.
Gee, there's a conservative economist out there.
No, it merely says it's a difference of opinion.
If you don't know,
the question is growth. You can say that he is overestimating the amount of growth his plan will put into place, but you can't say it's a lie.
So the premise then of Romney's tax cut is the same as the premise of George W. Bush's tax cut, that if we cut taxes, it's going to stimulate growth. That worked out really well for George Bush.
Well, it's actually a little different, of course, because you're simplifying the tax code and it makes it more business friendly. Now, but look, Tom, you can disagree.
Business friendly?
You can disagree with it, but let's not define lying down, right? It's not a lie to say this. It is a difference of opinion. Instead of calling it a lie, they should say that this is a, you know, ridiculously optimistic in the growth figures.
Romney said we have fewer people working today than when the president took office. Not true. There's a net positive of 125,000. Now, you know, it was actually big news. Well, you know, it was reported like a week and a half ago when the new jobs figures came out.
It's also misleading for the president to say I've created 5 million jobs, and he always
had
the caveat for a 30-month period,
right?
Because during his whole presidency, 125,000 jobs created is terrible. It's not a good record.
Sure, but that's because the first 4 months of his presidency, he was dealing with the last 8 months of the George Bush depression that was the result of the economic policies that you and Mitt Romney are supporting.
But the recovery is one of the weakest in
okay,
American history.
Okay, well, I would say that's a lie.
You don't think it's a weak recovery?
No. I would say that to say we have fewer people working today than when the president took office is a lie, because the numbers just don't, you know, they don't add up. He said, I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they have contraceptive care or not. But when Roy Blunt introduced an amendment, the Blunt Amendment, he came out and he said, of course I support the Blunt Amendment. I really think all Americans should be allowed to get around this religious exemption. I clearly want to have a religious exemption from Obamacare. He lied about that.
Let me just go back to the first one. I don't know about the contraceptive one. I haven't followed that issue closely. But you're right. He probably should have said, I wouldn't call it a lie, he should have said that we've just passed adding jobs to the economy in the last month.
He said oil production is down 14% on
natural
federal land.
Natural gas production is down.
Oil production is down 14% this year on federal
land. And the president said natural gas production's up. So yeah, they both lied, I guess.
But do you know how much oil production was up the year before?
How much was it up?
15%.
Yeah.
And it's down 14%. It's down 14% because you got natural gas replacing it. I mean, you know, okay, we're running out of time here, so we can do this all day.
Right. I just think we're defining lying down.
Yeah, okay, you're right. And Jamie Weinstein, check out the book. It's an e-book over at Amazon.com.
Yes.
The Lizard King.
That's right. The truth is out there.
The truth is out there. Beware. Jamie, thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So check it out. The Lizard King by Jamie Weinstein. And we'll be back with your calls, your thoughts on what happened last night and where this country is going right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. George in Englewood, Colorado. Hey, George, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I would ask Mitt Romney this question. How well did Bain Capital do during the 90s under the higher tax rates with Clinton?
They did great.
Why didn't Obama ask him that?
Well, that's a good question.
I think it's a great question. I mean, he says businesses will lay off people. He says he's a job creator.
Right. Right. Yeah, that would have been a very good question. You know, when the top tax rate was 3 points higher than it is right now, why didn't Bain Capital go down the tubes? George, exactly. Thanks for the call. It's an excellent point. Very, very well made. Jim in Palatine, Illinois. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I got to be honest with you. I've never heard your program until today, but it's an excellent program. So you've gained a listener today. I got a couple of comments I'd like to make, and then I'd like to ask you a question. First of all, I think it's utterly, it makes Romney look utterly ridiculous how he stood on that stage last night talking about how he was going to get tough on China. Right. And then today, with the announcement of the Sensata Corporation here in Freeport, Illinois, is going to be shipped to China.
It's in the process of being shipped to China. It's going right. The process will be finished the day after the election.
Yeah, the utter slap in the face is that they had the employees of the company train the people that will be taking their jobs.
Yep, yep. And they took down the American flag when those Chinese came over to learn how to operate the machines that are being shipped to China. They took down the U.S. flag. Bain Capital took down the U.S. flag.
There you go. I'm 58 years old, Tom. So I fall into that 47% that Romney talks about because I've been on disability for the last 7 years. I have degeneration of my neck. Yeah. First of all, I do pay federal taxes on my disability. Mm-hmm. I went on disability 7 years ago. I worked full-time since I was 18 years old.
Yep.
Paid into FICA, Social Security. Got a statement a few years back showing exactly how much I had paid.
Mm-hmm.
At the rate that I'm being paid per month by Social Security disability, I would have to live to be 128 years old to deplete the funds that I paid in.
Right. That's because Social Security is not a retirement plan. Social Security is an insurance program, and it's insurance against poverty in old age and disaster in less than old age. Fully a third of all the payments that Social Security makes are not to people like you and me who have worked our entire lives and paid into Social Security. Fully a third of those payments are to literally widows, orphans, and disabled people. People, you know, I mean, this is something 20-somethings, people in their 20s will say, you know, they'll call this program and go, why should I care about Social Security? It's not going to be there for me when I retire in 40 years.
Right.
Well, first of all, it will be there for you if we just make some minor changes. But secondly, it's there for you right now. If you're 20 years old, you get in a car accident, you break your neck, and you end up a quadriplegic, Social Security is going to take care of you for the rest of your life. 20 years old. It is covering everybody. It is an insurance policy, not a retirement plan. And that's why it's so insane that the Republicans keep trying to talk about it like it's a retirement plan. And you know you're not getting the kind of return you could get if you put the money in the market. Well, if you want a retirement plan, put your money in the market or wherever you think it should go. But that, you know, Social Security was never designed as a retirement plan. It's an insurance against old age poverty. When it was put into place in 1935, the main cause of death in the winter among people over 65 was hypothermia. They were literally freezing to death. And during the summer, people were dying of diseases associated with hunger in many cases in the United States. I mean, poverty, you know, Social Security cut poverty among the elderly more than in half in the first year that it went into place.
Well, my question is, Don, when I originally caught your program this afternoon, I was out in the car running a couple errands, and you had a guy named George called in. And that's when the first time I heard you bring up the thing about the backroom meeting that the Republicans had to pretty much sabotage, you know, the economy.
Yes, sir.
Why is it that the president, can he not? I mean, I don't expect him to come out and mention that meeting, but can he not come out in a debate and say, one of the biggest reasons the economy is going and has stayed in the tank is because the so-called job creators are, you know, sabotaging the economy, not hiring people, doing everything they can to ruin it, to make the president look
bad. These guys committed themselves. These guys committed themselves. Frank Luntz, Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Hensarling, Pete Hoekstra, Dan Lundgren, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Tom Coburn, Bob Ensign, Bob Corker, and Newt Gingrich. They committed themselves to sabotaging the economy for the next 3 years. This was the night Obama was inaugurated. Now, here's why he can't say that in a debate and why he's not saying that on the stump. To say that he has not been able to have success because the Republicans have obstructed things, it's a very, very fine line. If he had been calling out, and if the Democrats had been calling out the Republican obstruction from day one, the way that Harry Truman did in his presidency and during the 2 years that the Republicans controlled the House of Representatives, 47 and 48, Harry Truman called them the do-nothing Congress and constantly railed on them. Every time they shot something down, he yelled and screamed about it. If Obama and the Democrats had been doing that for 3 years, everybody would immediately understand what's going on. On the other hand, because they didn't do that, and I think they should have, I think this is a huge strategic mistake, because they didn't do that, if he were to say now, well, you know, I wasn't able to get things done because the Republicans wouldn't let me, A, it makes him seem weak, And B, it opens the door for Mitt Romney to come in and say, yeah, but I'm a Republican and I'll get these things done because they'll work with me.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Just like you were saying last night, how he worked across the aisle in his home state.
Yeah. And ended his governorship with 35% approval rating. And the Democrats in his state are not saying he worked across the aisle. And in fact, the whole, Romney Care thing originally was a Democratic idea. Romney comes into office and says, yeah, I'll go along with it. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. And, good on you for just discovering the show. What'd you say? Oh, 20 seconds. Oh, my God. I should have, I thought I had another minute. So let me, for those of you who don't know, this Robert Draper wrote this book, which was, badly titled. I mean, it should have just been a really snappy title like Treason. But it was called Do Not Ask What Good We Do Inside the U.S. House of Representatives. Came out just a couple of months ago. And in this book, Robert Draper lays out this invitation-only meeting that was held at the Caucus Room restaurant where these guys said that we are going to sabotage these bills. We are going to, I saw Harry Reid last week, and he said that in the 6 years, he's at the end of this year, he'll have been head of the Senate for 6 years. He said in the 6 years Lyndon Johnson was head of the Senate, he had one filibuster to deal with. Harry Reid's had to deal with over 370 of them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
More than anybody in history, more than any president in history. Why? Because of this conspiracy that was hatched by Paul Ryan and his buddies that night. Yep, it's the good, the bad, and the very, very delitationally ugly, the good. John Paul Stevens, after a speech for the Brady Center to prevent gun violence's legal action project, the former Supreme Court justice called on Congress to strengthen gun laws, especially in the wake of recent mass shootings like the one in Colorado over the summer. In a question and answer session, Stevens told the crowd that, I find it most difficult to accept the fact that notwithstanding the recent tragedies that you mentioned, how little activity there's been in lawmaking bodies to address this issue. The fact that Congress doesn't address it, I find mind-boggling, to tell you the truth. End quote. Justice Stevens is right. The fact that Congress is doing nothing to stop the epidemic of gun violence in America is crazy. It's time to start protecting American lives and taking these weapons off our streets. The bad. Vikram Pandit. Pandit is the perfect example of what's wrong with Wall Street. He resigned yesterday as the CEO of Citigroup after 4 years on the job. And during his four-year reign, Citigroup lost an astounding 88% of its value. Citigroup shareholders even cast a vote of no confidence in Pandit. But despite all of this, Pandit is still set to receive $260 million in compensation. We've let Wall Street bankers develop the notion that no matter how badly they mess up, they still rake in millions of dollars in the end. Wall Street is in need of some serious reform so that banksters like Pandit are no longer rewarded for steering their companies into disaster and for helping to destroy the American economy. And the very, very ugly, Brian Fisher. Fisher, head of the conservative anti-LGBT rights American Family Association, has been speaking out recently about the Southern Poverty Law Center's Mix It Up at Lunch initiative, which encourages children across America to sit with someone new at lunch on October 30th. In an interview with CNN about the issue, Fisher likened celebrating school diversity to giving children poisoned Halloween candy. He said, somebody takes a candy bar, injects it with cyanide, the label looks fine, it looks innocuous, it looks fine, it's not until you internalize it that you realize how toxic it is, end quote. Sorry, Brian. The only thing toxic here is your refusal to embrace diversity and equality for all Americans, and that is very, very ugly.
That's incredibly ugly.
Mitt Romney, 31 lies in 41 minutes. He broke his own record. Isn't that cool? Will in Blakesley, Pennsylvania. Hey, Will, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing? I was just thinking what Romney's doing with this election, if you want to call it, what he's campaign style. He's basically Gordon Gekko, where he looks at Obama as like another, like his nemesis in the Wall Street movie, where he was trying to take over that,
sure,
that airplane company. So in his view, everything legal or otherwise is okay to do as long as you win. And I mean, I know that's not a brilliant observation, but that's how he's running his campaign, and it is really frightening because there's absolutely not a shred he could care less about this country. It is really frightening how amoral this guy is. I don't know.
Well,
I mean,
it's not just that he's running a fact-free campaign. It's that he's open about it. I mean, you have one of his campaign senior advisors saying, we're not going to run a campaign based on fact checkers, right? We're not going to let fact checkers get in the way. And you've got another campaign advisor saying, oh, when we go from the primaries to the general election, we're going to etch a sketch, you know, the old Romney, and there'll be a new Romney. And it's like, and then we're all surprised that he's lying or he's flip-flopping or he's contradicting himself. Now, you know, the conservatives
are...
I
mean, my God, really, this is where it's come to. I mean, really, this is, I guess, the final stage of a plutocracy. I guess it is, right?
I believe it is. We are looking at, if it continues down this road, we are looking at the death of the American way of life. It is slowly dying. Will, thanks for the call. It is, and it's a tragedy. Paul in Mukilteo, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I was just listening to your last interview with Jamie Weinstein.
Yeah.
And it was just driving me crazy listening to this guy. He's sort of the poster child, in my view, for the death by a million cuts of honesty, integrity, and accountability in politics. When something is 100% misleading, 98% untrue, Jamie insists that we give that 2%. That we acknowledge that 2% as being, you know, we can't call this a lie.
Yeah.
And it just drives me crazy. This is where this whole false equivalency of both sides do it comes into play. And
I don't disagree in general. I don't, you know, Jamie's no longer here to defend himself, so I don't want to get into, you know, picking on him. But I do agree with that this whole idea of a false equivalency and both sides do it and all that kind of stuff is nonsense. And the Republicans have been, you know, running organized, orchestrated campaigns filled with lies. For example, climate change. You know, James Inhofe, who's, you know, if the Republicans take the Senate, if Scott Brown wins, is going to end up, you know, who thinks global climate change is a hoax, is going to end up the head of the Senate Environment Committee. You know, so either it's been Republicans running basically on lies, or maybe they believe them, maybe not, or They're shills for people who are promoting lies because there's money to be made. Jim in Schofield, Wisconsin. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. It's Schofield.
Oh, Schofield. I'm sorry.
I was just wondering if you had seen the piece in Mother Jones about attacks on U.S. diplomatic targets.
No.
It has an interesting graph. It has data from 1970 through 2010,
mm-hmm.
Attacks on targets. From Nixon through President Obama.
Right.
And the interesting thing about the graph is that during the Reagan and Bush senior years, the number of attacks is dramatically higher than during any other period.
Hmm.
And it's kind of, you know, my question is like the Mitt Romney and other people on the right are trying to make the attack on Benghazi as this big failure
right.
of intelligence.
Right. What about these several hundred, 200 to 300 Marines in Lebanon, for example, who
right.
died
on
the Reagan
administration? Right. Not just one attack, but two attacks.
Right.
And plus, talk about intelligence. You know, Bush Sr. was head of the CIA.
Right. And you want to talk about intelligence failures? What about 9/11? I'm with you, Jim. And it's going to be very interesting as we watch going forward. And thank you for the call to see how these guys try and turn this into some kind of national scandal. There's no there. I'm telling you. Frank in San Diego. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind?
Pretty good. I have a couple of questions. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. I'm from San Diego, but originally from Massachusetts. And Romney claimed he balanced the budget in Massachusetts when he was the governor.
Well, every state in the union except Vermont has a constitution which requires that the budget be balanced at the end of every year.
Yeah, but didn't
so Romney had no choice.
Didn't he leave it with a big deficit?
He left it. It wasn't so much a deficit. There was a debt. You know, you can issue bonds. I mean, you know, a state government can go into debt. It can't have a deficit because states can't issue money.
That's what I was aware of. And I thought, you know, the other thing is I remember when I was living there, that when he was going to run again for governor, they took a Suffolk College poll, university poll, and he was not going to get elected.
He had like a 30-something percentage approval rating at that point, which is why he bailed.
Yeah. Okay, very good program. I've been listening to it for about 2 or 3 years. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot, Frank, for calling. Thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. PJ, hey, PJ in Jacksonville, Florida. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. You know, I was listening to the debate last night, and do you remember when Romney said that the wealthy pay 60% of the taxes in this country?
Yes, he said it about 5 times.
Right. Well, we know that the wealthy own 90% of the wealth of this nation.
Right.
So I believe that proves that the wealthy are shortchanging the USA on their part of the taxes.
Shouldn't they
be paying 90% of the taxes if they own 90% of the wealth of this country?
I'm not sure that the 90% number is accurate, but it is very, very high. I don't have those numbers right in front of me. But the fact of the matter is, and you know, Limbaugh's always touting this, you know, look at how much these people are paying in taxes. The fact of the matter is, as a proportion of their income and as a proportion of their wealth, they're paying less in taxes than a person working at Walmart. And that I think, is your point, PJ, and it's a point very, very well made. Thank you very much for calling and making it. Very well made. Robert, in Port Charlotte, Florida. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hi there. Listen, I've got a comment on the Republican conspiracy at the Caucus Room Steakhouse.
Yeah.
I just learned about it, and I'm glad that you dare call it treason.
Oh, yeah. I think it is.
Well, I wish more people did. The thing that I've noticed, though, is that the very few people that I've heard that made comments about it have called it that they were plotting against Obama.
Yes, specifically, explicitly.
The way they were going to defeat him was to make the economy so bad that people would, and then they blame Obama for it.
Right, they wanted to hang the mantle of Herbert Hoover around President Obama and not only take down Obama, but take down the Democratic Party with him.
Well, and also, however, what they've done with their 307 filibusters is to prevent bills that would have created at least 2 million more jobs.
Yeah, minimally. And not just that. I mean, the original stimulus bill was supposed to be, you know, it's a third of it was tax cuts, which don't stimulate the economy. It would have been one third more effective, which probably would have dropped another, you know, percentage point off unemployment right now if the Democrats hadn't had to compromise with the Republicans. And some of the conservadems who still believe this weirdness that if you drop taxes on rich people, somehow it helps the economy. That's worked out really well over the last 30 years, right? You know, if they hadn't had to compromise and had done it right. So, yeah, good point, Robert. Thanks a lot for the call. It's 45 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Interesting times as we move forward. The question in my mind, the big question in my mind is how many people saw the debate last night versus how many saw the first debate? And did it unwind that damage from the first debate? We'll find out in the next few days.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we will be giving away a copy of the Tom Hartman Reader, autographed by the author, coming up in the next segment.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of decay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Indeed. let's hope. I mean, you know, we'll find out come November. Deanna in Leesburg, Missouri. Hey, Deanna, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I watched the debates last night, and I walked away with the impression that Romney promised this college student a job.
He did. He said, I'll get you a job when you graduate.
Isn't that buying a vote?
Well, that's a good question. Did Romney commit a felony last night?
I would think so.
I thought
it was against the law to buy a vote.
That's an excellent point, Deanna. I wonder if somebody's going to perform a citizen's arrest.
Well, wouldn't
somebody
that be
call
nice?
Code Pink quick. You know, I see it happening. Deanna, thank you for the call. That is brilliant. You caught something the rest of us all missed. That's super. So, I'm sorry, it's too late. It's Mike in Lafayette, Indiana. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm good so far. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the debate. Before I do that, I wanted to mention that I did read this Princeton economist paper, and I forget his name too. But
Jamie was referring to.
Yeah. One of the assumptions was the growth rate, which that was an assumption, but also the repeal of Obamacare, the savings from that, I think was another assumption. So I don't think they come right out and say, you know, that Obamacare gets repealed, then he can cut taxes, you know.
Right. Okay, so in other words, there were a whole bunch of qualifications.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Repealing Obamacare was a qualification.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense.
Assuming that's going
makes
to happen
sense. Yeah.
If he gets elected.
Yeah.
And
another
thing was, during a debate last night, I thought, you know, Obama had an excellent opportunity to bring up global warming issues when instead they were going back and forth about who's drilling more oil and natural gas in different locations or whatever. And that would have been a good opportunity not only for that, but also to call him out on his statement that, you know, he's going to get us off dependency on foreign oil in 5 years, which I guess is sort of another backhanded half-truth, as a matter of fact, because we would be dependent on Mexico and South America and Canada.
Right.
And
Mexico and Canada. He said North American independence, and he always qualifies it by saying North America. So the us he's talking about isn't the United States of America. Apparently, Mitt Romney is running for president of Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So excellent point, Mike. Thanks for calling and making it. KD in Esmond, Illinois. Hey, KD, what's up?
Hey, it's KB.
Oh, sorry.
I just had a quick point about one of the callers that called in yesterday to you, and you had mentioned that Obama has ended torture, and I just wanted to know if that was a correct statement.
I think it's by and large true, yes. He has stopped it as an official policy of the United States and also officially stopped rendition, although there's a fair amount of evidence that, you know, we're still dancing around the edges of it with some of our intelligence agencies.
That was just the only thing that I wanted to kind of mention, was because, like, we're still kind of bombing all these people through drones in Yemen and Pakistan. And I believe last month there was a death in the prison in Cuba. I forgot the name of the prisoner, but in Guantanamo Bay, there was a death of a prisoner last month, and like the conditions that they were keeping him in. I mean, I don't know if it qualifies as torture. It really sounded like torture to me.
Yeah.
Thanks for setting
the record straight. We're still a long way ahead of where we were under the Bush administration, when it was not just policy, but it was celebrated. So, and by the way, Deanna in Leesburg, Virginia is going to receive, and thank you. Deanna is the one who said, wait a minute, didn't Romney buy that vote from that kid or try to buy that vote from that kid? Isn't that a crime? She's going to receive our copy. Shane has selected her as the person to receive her copy of the Tom Hartman Reader, collected writings of that guy, Tom Hartman, brought to you by Stamps.com. And so, Deanna, thank you very much for that. Tom in Sussex, Wisconsin. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hey, hi, Tom. How you doing? You know, I was listening to your segment on the good, the bad, and the ugly a little while ago, and it just reminded me again of the Second Amendment. Unless I'm really misinterpreting what the Second Amendment says, to me, I think it was written at a whole nother time and a whole nother place where we were in this country. And, you know, it talked about maintaining a well-regulated militia.
Right.
And you know, that's something that a lot of the people that support gun rights, they don't know the first half. They just only remember the second half.
Right.
That, you know, that says that people are entitled to own a gun.
Yeah, the Second Amendment came out of a debate in Congress, or in the Constitutional Convention, and actually in Congress. It was an amendment to the Constitution, about whether or not there should be a standing army during time of peace. And the solution to this, Jefferson and Ben Franklin and a number of others did not want there to be an army during time of peace. Navy, okay, but no army. So therefore, we had to have a citizens' militia, the way it is in Switzerland. Every man between 14 and 74, 17 and 47 years old becomes a member of the military. The guns are kept in the armory. You know, if the country's invaded, they ring the bell and you know, the local leaders pass the guns out to everybody. And that was why the Second Amendment was passed. It wasn't passed so that we could rise up against an oppressive government. And it wasn't passed so that you could shoot the guy, you know, who just bought a bag of Skittles at the 7-Eleven and is wearing a hoodie. That's not why the Second Amendment was passed. Thank you, Tom. Well said. I appreciate the call. Coming up next, coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman program, I'll be challenging conservative Peter Ferrara. How long before we can make his head explode? About Mitt Romney's 5-point plan to fix the economy with low-wage burger-flipping jobs. Will Peter want fries with that? Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science, and the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for we the people. And don't forget, democracy requires you. Get out there, get active, occupy something. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.